Hello, hello, hello.
Hello.
I have been converted to that introduction, I guess. Welcome to Section 119, the show where we talk all things Aggie sports. I'm Daniel Hansen. I'm here with two wonderful gentlemen.
I'm Jaden Johnson, and I'm not that wonderful.
I'm Trevor Porath, and I'm a little bit more wonderful than Jaden, but not that
agreed.
Much.
So the one point, like the two gentlemen comes mainly from me, being like one and a half.
Well, in size, maybe.
No comment. We got a wonderful show for you guys today. We're going to be talking a little bit of Aggie football, which we kind of have to. Be talking, of course, about how much we got effed over, but also talking a little bit maybe about the future. Talking a lot about Aggie basketball as well, both men and women, because I'm stoked for that more than football, of course, or anything else really right now. And then, of course, going through our Aggie calendar. But first, let's just start off, get the elephant out of the room. How pissed are you guys off about football right now?
On a scale of 1 to getting the wrong burrito at Beto's, I'd say probably a 9.
What number is getting wrong burrito at Beto's?
It's its own number. Do you know how scales work?
We just broke math, people.
Let me explain a scale to you. Actually, I'm not even going to explain it. It made me very mad. For like so many different reasons. There's been a few games this season where I've been just so furious and mad at the team, or so mad at the coaching staff, or so mad at the officiating, or so mad at the fans, or whatever. Like, this just left me mad at so many different things in so many different ways.
Yeah, I sit like a 9, 8, somewhere around there also.
On the burrito scale.
And it's just kind of hard to fathom what has been going on this, you know, especially that last game where there was coaching, you know, wrong coaching decisions, player decisions, ref decisions that were just not the what you'd really do with a football team.
Unfathomable. Or a football game. I totally agree. I mean, the point that everybody wants to talk about is the refs, which, like, just absolutely inexcusable at the end by the refs. Like, I understand that there are a lot of things to blame here between coaching, between players, and the refs. And the refs are, like, obviously the easiest place to put the blame because that takes it a little bit off of our shoulders, which, you know, I get that. And it, with the refs making a different call on that pass interference at the end of the game, with the refs making the right call, let's be honest, at the end of the game, we win.
Yeah, I mean, you think about, like, how different, like, even just the beginning of this show right here would be if they did call a correct call, because let's be honest.
Right.
That was not offensive pass interference on Tarver. You think of how different we're talking about now. We're thinking, like, okay, maybe we can go beat Nevada. We're looking at 5-6. Granted, that's still not where we ever wanted to be in the season.
4.
Or if we beat Nevada, next season we'd be at 5. Because we're 3-7 right now. So if we had beaten New Mexico, we would have been 4-6.
If we had to be, I see.
Yeah. Okay. If we had beaten New Mexico, yes. I mean, that's a whole different vibe. I mean, that would give us a two-game winning streak, of course, if we beat Nevada, which is, at this point, not going to place a bet on that.
Right.
But, I mean, it gives us hope for the future if that happens. It gives us a little bit of a salvation, I guess, on this season, slightly. I mean, that one call, I mean, that and Air Force, I mean, it just impacts the season so much that you just kind of get, it's hard not to be pissed off at the refs.
Well, and I was talking this week on the Aggie Radio pregame show. We were talking a little bit about this, and the thing that I was thinking, looking ahead to the game, is how much of a difference maker winding up 3-9 versus 5-7 would be for the team. Because let's be honest, nobody had super high expectations for this team. I remember before the season seeing many people on Twitter, on message boards, all over, saying that their expectation for this team is somewhere between 5-7 and 7-5. There were a few optimists thinking we might win 8.
I thought our ceiling was maybe 9. I was everything fell our way.
I was at about the 7 range, but a lot of people, you know, looking at the losses and all the players that we lost in the offseason, a lot of people expected this to be a 5-7 win team. Had we won that game last night, and had we gone and win one of these last two games, which I still think is a pretty decent possibility, you know, that's a 5-7 team, which isn't good, but that's not an utter disappointment. Now we're looking at maximum, maybe a 4-win team. That's bad, 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 bad. That's Brent Guy kind of football.
Well, mathematically, but not probability, they could get, you know, 5 wins technically this year.
Technically, yeah. But I mean,
technically.
That's why I said mathematically, but yeah, not probability.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to look at in the BYU game. Granted, it's a rivalry, and you never know what happens in rivalries. But, I mean, you'd have to be kind of dumb at this point to bet on this team to win that game, especially if BYU is going to have the added, I guess, incentive of entirely keeping us out of a bowl game if we'd get to 5 wins. I mean, yeah, if they even needed more incentive to beat us, because, I mean.
But also with that, what I see, though, is I see Dallin Leavitt in that locker room.
You know he's going to be fired up for that.
He's going to be fired up for that in that locker room. He's going to try and say, come on, guys, if you don't want to do it for yourselves, at least do this for me.
I think that the team knows what's at stake there. I mean, they know that even if they're not playing for anything, you know, so to speak, as far as a bowl game goes or whatever, I think that they know what's going to be at stake there, and I don't expect a win or anything, but you never know. Crazy things happen. But going back to that call at the end, I had a really interesting discussion with both of you and a few other players as we just kind of sat in the stadium in disbelief after that game ended.
A few other fans, not players.
Yeah, true. Yeah, a few other fans, a couple of, you know, just the people sitting near us. And we literally sat, and I think the entire stadium had practically emptied, and we're just sitting there in disbelief of what had happened at the end of the game and realizing, you know, this is our last time in the stadium this season. And We had a little bit of a discussion about that pass interference call. And to me, it's so utterly ridiculous that you have all these four and a half hour long games because there's so many replays and reviews by the officials, and they're looking at every tiny little thing, even things that should literally be a 10-second, somebody in the booth says yes or no kind of thing. It's so just crazy to me that a blown call like that, which is so clearly a blown call, can't be looked at.
Yeah, I think that's like just kind of saying what I said in that little conversation. You look at Air Force, that game, the missed calls there, and then this game. Those two, if they're called correctly, it's very likely we get two wins. I mean, obviously, in New Mexico, it would have been a win.
Air Force is crazy, but
Air Force, we would have been up 14-0 if that Tarver catch was actually ruled a catch.
Right.
And you think about what that happens, we'd have 5 wins, probably 6 wins against Nevada next week. I mean, we're missing out on several hundred thousand of dollars because of missed calls from refs, which should be, I mean, granted, the one in Air Force was reviewed, and for some reason they still didn't think it was a catch. But, I mean, it makes no sense why you're going to leave that amount of money, that amount of, not power, but I guess like a gift back to the university that could be pushed back into the program or into other places of the university. You're not going to be able to fix that simply because you say, well, it's a judgment call.
Yeah.
And one thing I have a question about, okay, you know, all touchdowns will be, you know, reviewed no matter what. So if there is any... if there's any disbelief or, you know, question by the ref, call it a touchdown. Because they can go back and look at that and say, oh, never mind, it's not. We're going to read.
That is the case, but they couldn't, under the current rules, they couldn't go back and talk about
the Air Force game.
Okay, sure, yeah. Yeah, I see what you're saying. But, you know, in a situation like this, and I think this is where it's broken, is that had they called it a touchdown or not, they can't go back and tack on the PI or take it away, which I don't know. I guess what my suggestion would be is in any scoring play or in the last 2 minutes of any half, things like that should be reviewable. Personal fouls, holding calls, literally everything I think should be reviewable in those last few minutes. Anything that can be reviewed.
I would stop short of maybe like holding just because honestly, there's holding on almost every play. And if you're going to be able to make that reviewable, you're going to have a lot of people that say, well, hey, we missed this. We should be able to go back and review
sure,
that.
Sure, I understand
I would that. See. I would hold the line there. I kind of like maybe the NBA's rule where, like, the last 2 minutes they do review, like, out-of-bounds plays and stuff like that. I would love to see something like that instituted in pretty much every sport. I mean, yeah, you can make the argument a play in the first minute of the game is just as important as a play in the last minute. But at the same time, it's not. Because first play of the game, you're not going to go for the touchdown from 35 yards like we did.
Right.
That, like, the entire game was on that play. Everyone knew it. And the refs, frankly, blew it.
I just think you got the technology there. Use it or don't use it. You know? That's my two cents on that. So, obviously, just a disappointing loss. I don't want to sit here and go over everything that happened in that last disastrous 30-second sequence because I've gone and I watched that probably four or five times just trying to figure out what was going through the coach's head, what was going through the player's head. It's hard to make any sense of except that they messed up. So, you know, I don't want to sit here and go through every single bit of that because you all know.
Yeah, I think in this particular situation, looking back on it for the couple of replays I've seen and stuff, I give Kent Myers a bit of a pass on what he did simply because you saw him spring right back up and go to the line to spike it. I think
that was one of the things I was the most furious about right at first in the stadium.
I was furious about Myers, like, why the heck are you doing that? But looking back on it, I see what he's doing. I give him a pass there. I don't give a pass, though, to Matt Wells.
No.
One, because you wasted the timeout because you were not organized, which you should have been anyways. Second of all, because if you're going to use that timeout, plan the next couple plays out. I mean, every other good coach is going to plan several plays in advance so that they can just go straight through without a hitch. But we just did not see that, of course.
But Daniel, it was third down, so they couldn't just spike it. It would have been fourth down.
According to the scoreboard, which is totally official, right?
Yeah, I mean, that just kind of reinforces my point, to be honest. I mean, if you're using the scoreboard as, like, your main source of information, that's a problem to begin with. That's a foundational problem for the coach.
And confusing first down with third down. That is such... I mean, that may be... I don't know... And we've speculated on this in different shows. I don't know if Matt Wells is gone after this season, but if so, that may have been the nail in the coffin. Because that was so idiotic and just inexcusable. I think I'll leave it at that. It was just absolutely inexcusable what happened there. That was a game we should have won, could have won, or at least taken it to overtime. And it was blown by flat out just bad coaching.
You think about that game. I mean, we're focused on the last couple minutes. We're not even focusing on the fact that we lost another halftime lead. We were winning 21-6.
Exactly.
You should not lose after you're winning 21-6 in a game that's that much of a, I guess, offensive embarrassment, I guess, to the game of football at some points.
So, of course, the team took a ton of heat. The coaches took a ton of heat. Twitter was a dumpster fire, as it always is. The USU message board was a dumpster fire, as it always is. Everything just kind of blew up, and of course, players got criticized, fairly or unfairly. I want to know, and in the last, after the game, for anybody that was there at the stadium, after the game, there was a loud, probably maybe one of the loudest parts of the entire game was fans booing. Now, I know that me, as someone, I was there booing. It was not directed to the team.
Yeah, it was directed at the refs. It was directed maybe slightly at the coaching, but mostly at the refs and just kind of the last minute of that game, how badly it went.
And for me also, at the punk New Mexico players who were out dancing around, acting like they just won the Super Bowl after they had a game handed to them. I mean, literally, like, put in their lap and handed to them. But a few players lashed out on Twitter and said, you know, you guys have no idea what we're going through. You're not in the locker room every day. You don't know all the work that we put in. You shouldn't be criticizing. I beg to differ. To be frank, I beg to differ.
And I completely agree. Like, I just kind of go to the example of when I'm doing stuff. Like, if this show sucks, if one of my columns sucks, if my work sucks, or if even at home if I don't do my chores, if I do bad in class. People tell me about it. And that's because they've been placed in a position where they kind of have that ability to do so. When it comes to Aggie football, we've paid money. Us personally, we've camped out for tickets in bitter cold.
We're paying student fees.
Paying student fees so we can come see this game. Like, is there any reason why we shouldn't be able to, I guess, criticize when there's, like, such a bad play happening or something?
I'll say this. Where I draw the line is personally attacking players. Because these are student athletes. These are guys that aren't out here getting paid. I understand that. They're getting a scholarship. They're not getting paid, though.
Scholarship isn't getting paid?
We've talked about that argument. We're not even going to touch that.
That'll make our podcast go way too long. But
what do you think, Trevor? I mean, you were there with us. I mean, do you feel that you're justified in booing a player or criticizing at least?
I feel I'm justified at booing because one, I was booing at the New Mexico like you guys were, but two, even if we were booing at the Utah State players. You know, we could, you know, booing at them for, you know, not having their stuff together when they need to. Booing the coaches for calling a timeout they shouldn't have called. I know peewee coaches that wouldn't have called that timeout.
Mm.
So it's just crazy how they think they can't, you know, if they do everything wrong, but that we can't do anything about it.
And that goes right to the point that I was making.
Of course, these guys, this young, you know, they get a participation trophy for everything. So, you know, you could be dead last in the conference and still get a yay, I participated trophy.
Yeah, I think that personal attacks on Twitter, you know, going and saying, hey, at Lawan Hunt or whatever player you want to insert there, you suck, you're a piece of crap, you ruined that game. Yeah, that's too far. But you know what? You don't do a good job, you're going to get criticized. That's part of the game. It's college football.
If you don't want to get criticized, make your block, make a catch, win a couple of games. If the team was 5-6 or whatever, I wouldn't really criticize or if they were showing effort, I wouldn't criticize. Anyways, talking about football, Aggie football at least kind of depresses me. We're going to move on to a topic to make me happier a little bit. I know you guys were at the game, Aggie basketball with NJIT. I know you probably also kept up with UC Irvine as well. Just give me your thoughts, I guess, on what you've seen so far in the season and, I guess, what you kind of read into that.
I'll tell you what. I am the conductor of the Utah State basketball hype train right now. This team is for real. I'm serious. Did you guys watch that UC Irvine game?
I did. I watched it. They had a feed through UC Irvine. The commentators were a little weird, but
the radio commercials were awful.
Yeah, it was kind of weird.
No, I mean, UC Irvine, I get it. They look like crap. They really, like, I think that a lot of teams could have gone and beat them. UC Irvine looked really bad, but we looked really good.
A lot of the time, UC Irvine is one of the top teams in the Big West, and the Big West is one of those top mid-major.
Yeah, they are projected, right. I think, second this year, I think.
No, in the conference. So, I mean, exactly.
And that's behind Long Beach State, which is another really good
program. And it's a big, big athletic team. I think that this is a team that last year, the year before, we lost to. You know, we would have lost to. I mean, last year we did. A slightly different team. But I think that this team, in this game, in this situation, we would have lost in past years. And instead we went and won by 20.
Yeah, that was the most impressive part to me is that I feel a lot of times with Aggie basketball in the Stu Morrill age, we won games, but sometimes it wasn't really all that impressive. Mm-hmm. That's what's kind of impressed me so far, is that they've been impressive, which kind of sounds redundant. But, I mean, you look at the athleticism on the team, and this is kind of a thought I had watching one of the games, I think it was NJIT. But, like, Alexis Dargington, if he comes, like, 5 years ago, everyone is going to be stoked about him. He would be, like, the best recruit of the class. Like, he'd be, like, the focal point of, like, the offense, it would seem. At least I kind of feel that way. But with this recruiting class and on this team right now, he's kind of almost not an afterthought, but he's just kind of
more of a role player.
Yeah, he's more of a role player. I think that's, like, one of the biggest differences with this team compared to, like, years past. A
lot of depth.
And another difference between that is the coach. Stu Morrill was more of a play it slow, play your defense, get points, you know, don't let them get their points and we'll get the rebound, get some points. You know, Duryea is more of a, okay, you go out there, you know, you can go play fast, get your points, just, you know, shoot the ball. Don't worry about what getting it down to the 5 seconds left on the shot clock kind of.
Well, I mean,
scored 93 points.
Exactly. I was just going to say, I haven't looked at numbers, but, I mean, as far as my memory serves me, I remember very few times in the Stu Morrill era. And listen, this is not like me like trashing Stu Morrill. Of course, he's a legendary, wonderful, great coach. But in the Stu Morrill era, I very, very, very rarely remember us getting 90-plus points in a game.
We never did, really.
It just didn't happen.
Like I said, he was more of a slow-it-down, defensive kind of coach.
And given maybe part of that, there was a 35-second shot clock. That probably factors in. But...
And he liked their players to shoot it at, like, with 5 seconds left on the shot clock.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'll say this kind of about Stu Morrill. And again, we recognize Stu Morrill is the greatest coach in Aggie basketball history. Like, that's
no question.
No question. I feel like the game was kind of changing and he wasn't. At sometimes, like, you kind of see all these new teams coming, super athletic, very fast-paced offenses. And while Stu Morrill still kept great fundamental teams and those made his team still good, I think especially when we moved up into the Mountain West, I'm not sure his kind of coaching philosophy really kind of matched with what the conference was. And I kind of feel like that's where Tim Duryea gives me at least a lot more hope for Aggie basketball, because I think he fits more into what modern college basketball looks like. I think he's more prepared, well, not more prepared, but like, I guess more suitable to that environment and to capitalize on what's available there.
Agreed. So I want to know what two impressive wins over UC Irvine and NJIT. Last week on the show, I said if we can start out 2-0, that will excite me beyond belief. Because these are two, I mean, these aren't cupcakes. These aren't bottom of the barrel, terrible teams that we should probably not even be playing and we're wasting our time against. These are good teams. How much stock do you put into those wins?
I put enough stock into it to say that we're better than them. I think these are kind of more resume fillers a little bit. Like, they'll show up, I think, when, like, at the end of the year they're looking at us on the bubble or something like that. Like, they have these two wins against teams that are in like the 101 to 150 RPI ranks or something like that. Do I think this is going to push us over like another team, another mid-major that's also contending for a tournament spot or something? No, I don't really think. I think UC Irvine's taken a little bit of a dip after losing like the 2 7-foot-7 guys that they had on their team in years past. And I think NJIT is still kind of, they're still building. I mean, this I think is their first year in the Atlantic Sun. Or second year, maybe. I mean, this is still a team that's kind of a little bit new to Division One. I think they're still climbing. It makes me excited about Aggie basketball where we can go, because I think we've played well in those two games. I don't think the two wins are super impressive, though.
These aren't like go brag to all your colleagues at work because we went and put a smackdown on NJIT. You know, it's not like that. But UC Irvine is a pretty impressive team. I think that when all is said and done, they finish probably around 75 in the RPI. It's a pretty decent team. They went last night and just put a smackdown on South Dakota State, which, you know, I'm not going to like sit here and pretend like South Dakota State's a powerhouse, but they are predicted to win the Summit League. They're a decent team, and UC Irvine just went and beat them by 25. I think that these are wins that excite me in the sheerly from the fact that we looked good doing it. Had we gone and beat both these teams by a point or two, that's probably a different story. But we looked good doing it.
Yeah, that's kind of what I take the most from it, too. I mean, again, and let me, I guess, clarify my thoughts a little bit. NJIT and UC Irvine and their respective conferences are good teams. And I guess I think I'm looking at more like from somebody on like the East Coast or something, looking at tournament brackets or something 3 months down the road, looking at this. I think I'm not sure that it's going to really make them stop at all thinking about that. But like you said, we played really well. Defenses looked pretty good at times. UC Irvine, I think, especially looked really good. NJIT, that Lynn guy just kind of went off on us. We couldn't really do much to stop him anyways.
That was good.
But, I mean, overall, the team has looked good. And especially for just being the first two games, third including exhibition, it looks really good for the point of the season we're at.
And how do you guys feel about two freshmen coming in at clutch time to bring the Aggies to the win?
Dude, Sam Merrill, I think, was player of the game, honestly.
Phenomenal.
Like, you look, especially, like, where his baskets came. Like, NJIT was almost coming back into that game, took the lead for a quick second, but second half, nobody was really making shots, and Sam Merrill comes in, gets, like, the 15 points off the bench. That was huge.
You want to talk about a guy. I get we're two games in, but you want to talk about a guy that has exceeded my every expectation. I was like, man, this is a guy. He's coming fresh off a mission. He's going to have those mission legs. He'll probably redshirt. No. Dude is a star. So thrilled to have him.
God's rewarding him for going on his mission.
Call it what you like, but I mean, the guy plays hard. Like, that was one thing I saw from Merrill.
This isn't,
like,
a BYU podcast.
Yeah, true that. Or a Southern Virginia podcast. But, like, I remember, like, there was one point he was guarding, I don't know the guy's name. It was one of those weird names I couldn't pronounce. It was, like, number two from NJIT. And Merrill was, like, 6 inches shorter than him, a lot less bulk. And he was, like, really pushing into him on the paint in defense. And, like, he did not really give an inch. That's what impressed me. Like, more than just the shots, his shot-making ability, which was really good. Like, he was, like, 6 of 7 or something like that. So he even picked his spots real well. But he played hard. And I think that's going to – that overall on the team played hard. And I think that was amazing.
Maybe we should have put him on Lynn.
I'm not sure that would have helped either.
Play of the Lynn, game. Dude, he looked like Chris Paul out there. That guy was so good.
He looked good. I also looked after the game. He took a lot of shots.
He did.
6 of 17 from three. Shots. But, I mean, if you're the only player on your team that could put a ball through the hoop, that's understandable.
Yeah. Dude was balling.
Yeah. Play of the game, though, I want to, like, see what your thoughts on this were, because we've heard a lot about Kobe McEwen coming in, and we thought, like, okay, he's going to be the star. That play where I think it was Barnabo or somebody, like, kind of airballed the three. Everybody gave up on it, and all of a sudden you see, like, Kobe just come out of nowhere, pretty much dive, throw the ball back in, and Quinn Taylor gets an and one on it. It was there in the first half.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
That was, like, the play of the game for me. Like, that was an amazing effort play, and then just flat out awesome.
What I liked about that was good, though, is the ball looked like it was pretty much almost a foot out of bounds. He jumped with a foot in back, like a foot, like, I'm talking, like, you know, measurement foot in bounds, jumps over and hits it in. So he had to jump like at least a yard to actually hit that into Quinn Taylor to get that end one.
I almost lost my mind when that happened, just because that kind of hustle is the kind of thing that can't be coached. I mean, maybe it can. I don't know. That's debatable. But, like, a kid's got it or he doesn't. And Kobe McEwen, he made multiple plays. That was the most immaculate, but he had multiple plays. It was like everybody else had given up, or he just went out and just played ridiculously hard and, like, earned
the block at the end of the half.
Exactly. That was another one that comes to mind. And, dude, I mean, aside from just overall talent and athleticism and skill, he has hustle, and that's going to help us. Just the mindset, passing that along to the team.
Yeah. The one thing that, like, that really kind of encourages me for the trajectory of Aggie basketball, because you look at Kobe McEwen, I'm going to kind of go really kind of assuming here. He comes to Aggie basketball. He already knows he's going to be the star. He could have come here and pretty much just launched threes, been really cool looking on the court, and we still probably would have loved him as long as he actually made some of those shots. He could have just used this, honestly, as an audition for some other program even. But you look at the heart he's putting in right now. I mean, the Alan Bishop videos that were tweeted out before the season started, that look, he was working hard then. The plays he made against NJIT and UC Irvine. He came to this school not wanting to just, be himself, lift himself up. He came here to make Aggie basketball a great program, and he's putting his heart and soul into doing that. That is awesome to see, especially for this team right now in the, second year of Tim Duryea.
Well, as much as I'm, like, hyped up on the team right now and so thrilled to be 2-0, it's really unfortunate that we're going to go in on Wednesday and lose to Bristol, because everyone knows Bristol is a national powerhouse and we have no shot at beating them.
If we lived in the UK, I would agree with you, maybe.
Do you guys – I just want to throw this out there to any listeners who – don't know who Bristol is, as I didn't before I did a Google search last night. This team is when I searched on Google Bristol basketball, the first two results that came up were high schools and then the Bristol that we're playing. This is a team that plays in what did you call that?
It's the United States College Athletic Association, USCAA. I didn't know that existed until earlier today when I was just kind of doing some Google searching around.
I think I played in that association back in middle school.
Junior Jazz.
Yeah. Junior Aggies.
It literally goes, okay, so here's like the tower of college basketball. It goes NCAA Division 1, 2, 3, and then NAIA Division 1, 2, and then you've got like your NJCAA, your junior colleges. And then you've got like three or four other like smaller ones that I don't even know the names of. And then you've got this, whatever that one's called, that Bristol plays in. And not only that, like, it's one thing for them to be the powerhouse of that conference or that division and whatnot. Well, this is a team that last year went and they were, I just had this pulled up, they were 4-16 in that.
They're playing to like a bunch of colleges that you see the signs on the side of the highway and you spend 2 minutes with your family talking about like what the heck is that college.
And what's kind of funny is though is like 2 or 3 years ago or maybe 5, I don't know, but Bristol was playing in NCAA Division 1, but they lost their status and had to go down to USCAA and they're not winning.
I did not know that. Here, let me just read you a few names of the teams that Bristol lost to last year. Claremont Mud Scripps. Yes, Claremont Mud Scripps. That's a university. Panoma Pitzer College. Occidental. I've actually heard of that one. Chapman College.
What are a bunch of fake universities you make to put on your resume to get that job?
Life Pacific College. However, and here is their redeeming win of the season, they did put a 50-point smackdown on Future College.
Dude, Future College is a powerhouse in the USCAA.
Literally Future College. I'm not just trying to hate on Bristol. I get it. You know, they're a small school. They're probably doing what they're supposed to do. I mean, except not even winning in that division. But my point is, Utah State should go and win handily. And even if they don't, or even if, you know, whatever happens, it doesn't even go on the record. Yeah. It's basically an exhibition.
I really wish that they would release betting lines for games with, like, Division One and then, like, other divisions. They don't do that for, like, at least football. I don't think they do it for basketball. If they did, though, what would you guys think the betting line would be here?
Plus 35?
It's about 30.
I'd take the over on that.
Yeah, this could get out of hand. Along with that, they've also got coming up, just looking at the calendar, of course, this Saturday they've got Idaho State.
Yeah, that's part of the Cancun Challenge or whatever.
As was NJIT. And Idaho State, you know, a lot of times that's like, oh, Idaho State, we got another exhibition. Idaho State went down to New Mexico and gave them a game at the Pit. New Mexico, not did I say New Mexico State?
You said Mexico, but
New Mexico. We did. You know,
they're the same school.
Who knows what New Mexico is going to be this year? That's still impressive. So you know that could be a game that gives us a challenge. And then next week, next Tuesday, so a week from when we're shooting this today, they're playing in Cancun against Purdue.
And then the game after that's going to be between either Texas Tech or Auburn,
depending which will be Wednesday.
Yeah, depending on whether we win or lose, and the other game between Texas Tech and Auburn, whether they win or lose.
It's the third place game, essentially, of the...
Yeah. That game, those two games are the ones I'm really most excited about right now, because I think that's when we really learn, I guess, what this team is. I think in past years you've seen us go against like those large programs, and we just get outclassed athletically, sometimes systematically as well. I would like to see us hold our own against that. Maybe not win, because, I mean, Purdue's a really good program. Texas Tech and Auburn, not as great, but, I mean, still pretty good programs as well.
I think Purdue is a top 10 team this year.
They played Villanova
really well. I really think that they are. That's a good, good, good team.
So I think if we can go in, not lose by 20.
Okay,
It would be great.
I was just going to ask you, what would be a good loss for you? Like, there's not a good loss, but, like, you know, like a, you know, a.
If we could keep it within single digits with either team that we face, I think that would be a really good indicator of this team actually being a good team.
I'd be feeling really good about single digits against Purdue.
Against Purdue, probably under 20. Against Texas Tech or Auburn, single digits.
I think that those are winnable games. I wouldn't be happy with a loss in either of those. I really think that Auburn or Texas Tech, those are the kind of games that on the level that we feel like the team is on, or that many people feel like the team is on, those are games that that team needs to win.
I would say maybe Auburn. Texas Tech, I think, is a little bit better. I mean, they've been a tournament team the past couple years. But, I mean, again, I would love a win. I'd be stoked out of my mind. But if we, again, if we're just able single digits in the game the entire 40 minutes, that'd be a major step up, I think, for this program.
And we'll preview this a little bit more next week. Right now, you know, the teams, they still got Bristol and Idaho State ahead of them. So,
anyways, we also want to give a little bit of love to the women as well, because, I mean, we got two undefeated basketball teams here. We haven't really followed the women too much, or at least I haven't. I don't know about you two, but they've actually looked somewhat decent. I think a little bit better than maybe we kind of expected.
I wanted to go out to their game, but they play it Sunday at 1 in the afternoon. Like,
yeah, they played that
one.
What
kind of a game is that?
They had one like right after the men's game, which unfortunately I couldn't stay for that one either. But we'll make it out to some games. We'll give you a little better analysis. But what's something, I guess, that you've heard from the women's team that's maybe surprised you or encouraged you? I mean, we were picked to finish like ninth in the Mountain West, so I mean,
yeah,
there's not much
11.
That's necessary to encourage us beyond that. But
I like how we're a team from down under.
Yeah, a lot of Australians.
A
lot of good recruits too.
We had three Australian starters. You know, so
I've heard a lot. I mean, again, I haven't followed women's basketball super closely, and I'm going to this season. I plan to be at a lot of the games. I know that they picked up a very highly rated recruit in Haley Bassett, who was the Deseret News Miss Basketball in Utah last year, or Salt Lake Tribune, I guess.
That's a major win to be able to take that, because I don't know what their recruiting methods were, but I'm pretty sure BYU and Utah at least had her on their radar.
Yeah, I would sure imagine so. And you know, a lot of people are saying that she's going to be a generational type player for Utah State. So I'm hyped to see that, see how the team plays out. I mean, you take a team like this, I think it's going to be somewhat similar to the volleyball team where they're picked to finish pretty low, and I think that they're going to exceed some expectations.
Yeah, I mean, I could see us maybe getting a win in the Mountain West tournament, which, again, for where we're selected right now, I think so. I mean, you think about, like, the first week of the tournament or something, like, we'd be facing, like, the seventh team in the Mountain West, or if we finish like eighth or something, maybe Air Force, who is still not that great of a program right now. But I mean, like you said, Haley Bassett is a good player who's only going to get better as the season progresses. Shannon Duffesy had, like, I mean, we'll give her a shout out here, 14 rebounds in their game against Montana State, most ever by a Nagy freshman since the program was reinstated in like 2004.
It's good to see stuff like that for freshmen. It's awesome.
I mean, there's. And again, she'll only get better as well as the season progresses. So, I mean, a lot of encouraging stuff for women's basketball, which, again, I'm not an expert on, so we'll see where it goes.
Well, and in a season after, I'm sure part of the reason why they were picked so low is after losing their star player, Funda, last year to transfer to Florida. I mean, she was an absolute superstar to lose a player like that.
She was
the
team, pretty much.
Yeah. But they got a lot of young players, and it'll be fun to watch.
Good leader in Rachel Brewster, too. So, I mean, when we're watching Aggie men's basketball and we can't get enough of Aggie basketball, the women are going to be doing pretty well. But we're going to move on here now to our Aggie calendar, just kind of update you on everything else that's happening. We've talked a little bit about men's basketball this week. We'll just repeat again. Wednesday against Bristol should be a win. Saturday against Idaho State should be a win, but we'll see. I mean,
could be interesting.
Yeah.
Along with that, women's volleyball, they've only got three games left this season. They're going to be on the road Wednesday night against Fresno State, and then they come back for their final two One on Saturday against San Jose State. That's their final Mountain West Conference game. And that's one that, you know, San Jose State's kind of struggled. So you want to go see a good Aggie win on a beautiful Saturday afternoon. I mean, maybe it'll be snowing. I don't know. But that's 1 o'clock on Saturday against San Jose State. And then next week they finish up Tuesday night against Weber State. I think that's just about it. I mean, most of the other sports aren't really in season right now.
Yeah, there's cross country on Saturday. There's the NCAA championships, and I think we have
one Aggie going to that, which is awesome. I think I read it was like the first Aggie since like 1990 or something like that. So.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what the guy's name was. Do you guys remember his name? Give him a quick shout out.
I feel like I should, and probably should have prepared for this. I just can't say I follow cross country too closely. But, you know, we're kind of getting to the...
Dylan Maggard.
Dylan Maggard.
I'm pretty sure that's his name.
Shout out to him, man. That's awesome. So, you know, kind of winding down some of these fall sports, and eventually we're going to start talking a little bit more about the spring sports and what's coming up there. But a lot of good stuff right now.
Yeah. I mean, anytime Aggies win, that's a good thing, and hopefully basketball's going to give us that right now. Anyway, yep. That's going to be us signing off. Any last thoughts, guys?
Just go Aggies. As always, thanks for tuning in.
Goodbye, goodbye, goodbye.
F the Mountain West refs.
Yeah, you're right.